We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the Eastern Conference preview show of the In the Know podcast. These are the teams that the Pelicans will face all of like 30 times this year, two games each. But there is a lot of interesting movement in the Eastern Conference. There's a lot of fun teams to talk about. And Michael and I are going to basically, I'm going to rattle through how I think they're going to finish, starting with the worst team, ending with the best team. Michael and I will then argue about whether we think they're true. We'll mention some things that happened with each team to give you guys an idea of what happened to see why we think what we think. I think it's going to be fun because I enjoy talking about the foibles and mistakes other teams have made, because every other team makes mistakes and my team is perfect.
I would like to believe that.
So, without any further ado, Michael, and if you argue with me on this one, you are the dumbest person on the planet. The worst team in the Eastern Conference this year is going to be Philadelphia. Do you agree or disagree with that assertion?
Have people ever done with further ado?
I don't know
what ado is. That's how excited I am.
It's what my dog does.
Yeah, when talking about Philadelphia, my mind wanders into what the word ado means and whether people want more of it anywhere else. But it's remarkable what they've done, and any person who puts a dollar towards a ticket for this team, like, They're a hero in some respects. I couldn't imagine. I mean, that Hornets team that bottomed out, that went 18-64, like, that wasn't the plan at the start. Baron Davis got hurt. Jamal Mashburn, had the vertigo issues. And that team.
When Gore broke his finger.
Yeah, and that team ended up with Lee Nalon as their small forward, but this is almost like a team going in with the intentions to build what that Hornets team wound up being. I mean, it's unreal. All right, promise me you're not looking at their roster or anything right now. If you are,
closed it.
Who do you think their second leading returning scorer? I mean, obviously Michael Carter Williams is first. Do you know who second is? Can you even name?
Did Jason Richardson play last year, or was he out all year?
He's on Orlando.
Jason Richardson, did he go to Orlando?
I don't know.
You don't even know. Oh, come on. You're supposed to be the expert. No, Jason Rich is still with the
I don't think he played. I don't know where he
is. He was out all last year, so I just checked that. Second, wow, I mean, it was going to be Thaddeus Young.
Yeah,
he's gone.
Spencer Hawes is gone. Obviously, Evan Turner.
Roten? Is Roten's on, did he play enough to be to score anything?
Yeah, I mean, and he's probably the greatest evidence that Michael Carter-Williams was, you know, not as legitimate as the stats said, is because whenever Roten got the starting spot, he was putting up triple-doubles too on this horrendous team. But, yeah, Roten, and then you got to look at guys like Henry Sims. And, you know,
really?
Yeah, Henry Sims and Hollis Thompson. And, I mean, these are your big-time returning scorers. Obviously, they have Noel that's going to play this year, but...
I'm trying to remember who else.
This is an...
I can't even remember who else is on the team.
This is,
Shved was traded there. Shved probably scored a little bit up in Minnesota.
I mean, 4 points a game, yeah. Luke Mbamute. I mean, you've got... You could pull the roster back up now. You've got a terrible...
Take a look.
I think Michael Carter-Williams... would be.
Is Lavoy Allen still there, or did he get traded? He got traded, I think. No. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you Michael Carter-Williams would be in the Pelicans' rotation, and I don't think Noel.
Noel would be.
You think so?
He'd be in it, just not getting a lot of minutes.
But I mean, look at the rest of this junk. So I mean, this is.
Hey, come on. They have Ronald Roberts Jr. on this roster.
See, like, this is one of my things when people make predictions. It's like, well, they've got to win 20 games because even that's bad. Every game is an individual game. They don't play all 82 at the same time. On what night against what team would you possibly say that Philadelphia could or should be? I mean, they should be the underdogs every single night, regardless of where the game is played and against who, you know, who's injured or who they're playing. They should be the underdogs every single night.
They probably get to be the beneficiaries of like 10 fourth game and 5 night games.
I don't care, but would they?
You still think they should be the underdog? I don't disagree with you. I mean, I can't look at this list and come up with the starting five that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, give me a scenario. Fine. Fourth game and fifth night against who at Philadelphia would you bet on Philadelphia?
Austin.
It's not me. No.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't bet on it. You're right.
Yeah.
I would look at, so this is their depth chart, okay? Starter. Carter Williams, Tony Roten, Hollis Thompson, Luke Richard Bamute, who, by the way, couldn't get minutes in Sacramento last year, Nerlens Noel. And their second unit is Casper Ware, Elliot Williams, Jason Richardson, if he's actually playing, Arnett Moultrie, and Henry Sims.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I watched Henry Sims at Georgetown. I didn't even like him in college. I can't imagine he's a decent rotation NBA player. I mean, the most interesting thing I could say about them lately is this whole KJ McDaniels scenario in which McDaniels basically took a 1 year deal as opposed to the standard 4 year second round deal. So, you know, maybe he's smart and he's getting out of there after a year, but I mean, it's just, I've read all these kinds of things explaining it different ways and they're not really tanking, they're whatever, but it's just a disgrace what they're putting out there, and I don't think it's going to work. I think this strategy only works if you get the once-in-a-decade player.
Right.
You can't just acquire a ton of B-minuses and Bs. And, you know, eventually, and we'll see some teams that fit into this, eventually it just becomes overcrowded. You got a team like Orlando, I'm sure we'll talk about soon, who they don't have that star. They have a bunch of average guys, and then they don't get enough royal jelly or touches or playing with enough good guys to be able to play off. Like, this strategy only works if you get the star, and I don't think they've gotten the star yet. And I don't think they're going to get him.
Okay. So, I mean, I am not. So, do you think that Philadelphia is a team that will challenge to be an all-time bad team? Like, the record right now is 9 wins?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's 8 wins if you consider the shortened season, but 9 wins.
Yeah, if you put the over-under at 14.5, I'd take the under.
Okay. All right, so let's just move on from Philadelphia and these players that I don't even recognize who they are. Orlando is my second worst team. And I'll tell you why. I expect that Oladipo will be better. I don't think Aaron Gordon is going to produce much in his first year as he figures out what kind of player he is. I think eventually he'll be pretty good. I don't think he's going to be that right off the bat. He's also very young. I think he's the youngest one in the draft. And they brought in a bunch of really crappy veterans. I mean, I like Channing Frye fine, but I just don't see this team having... They got rid of Aflalo, and Aflalo was fantastic. And what they brought in doesn't even compensate for the loss of Aflalo, and this is a team that I think is trying to play the game of we want to tank more, we want to tank more, but we're going to point to a few high-priced guys we paid money to so we can say, hey, we were trying. I mean, that's really the feeling I get for Orlando. Because there's no way you can tell me that it makes any sense that you would sit there with a team that was this awful and say, my two big acquisitions needs to be Ben Gordon and Channing Frye.
And not only that, but how little they got for Aflalo. Like, that's still mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, this is what I'm talking about of... I think, like, I would love Tobias Harris as a 6th-7th man. I would love Vucevic as your 4th best player. You know, I would absolutely love, you know, to see what a guy like Fournier could do if he's the 8th-9th man getting regular minutes. I even think Harkless has some potential in the league. Kyle O'Quinn, I think, is the most underrated backup center in the NBA. Like, they are just chock full of guys who would be very valuable rotation players on a good to great team, but now they're all miscast, and because they're miscast, I think this team's in asset collection mode, but since they're miscast, these guys aren't going to play to their potential. Like, somebody like Mo Harkless, you know, I think I talk about this all the time about how people say that GMs draft poorly or draft well. I think more of it is about development and where they go than who they were when they came out. And I think he's just going to, like, they're just going to squander him there. He doesn't have a clear role, and they'll ask him to do too much. He won't be able to do it, and then they'll bench him like they did last year. And it's full of guys like that. They're playing Oladipo out of position, you know, hoping that eventually he could be a Westbrook type, and now they go and get Elfrid Payton, but I don't think he plays much this first year with as many veteran guards as they have. It's just, it's poor construction, and it only works if you could take two or three of these guys and flip them for a cornerstone, but because of the way you construct your roster, those guys aren't going to play well enough for a team to be interested in them for their cornerstone. So, I again, this is another operation. I don't see how it ever gets off the ground.
Yep. Unless they get the big guy.
Yeah. I mean, and I could actually see it going the other way, in which they actually lose somebody like Vucevic, who, you know, is a guy that would be an ideal 3rd or 4th guy on a good team. I don't really see it here. I think an Elfrid Payton and Oladipo backcourt, when they do get chances to play together, could be, you know, really fun to watch and something that I would tune in for. I think Tobias Harris is his destiny is like a. I think he's kind of a poor man's Anton Jameson, like in his prime, where he's like that 3-4 hybrid that is probably best in like a 6-man role where he could just gun. Like, I think Tobias Harris is a really interesting player and would be a really interesting player on a good team, but, you know, kind of stuck here. And now what happens if they put Fry at the four? Do they try to play Harris at the three? And, you know, Andrew Nicholson now is a guy that could be Channing Frye on 1/5 of the contract, but now he's buried because Frye is there. So I really don't understand any of it.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on from them because they're kind of sad and depressing. and it's like, the problem with Orlando and Philadelphia is, like, I like looking at some of, like, the teams that are at the bottom in other conferences to, like, look at a guy on their team who, like, maybe if we acquire that guy, that team's not going anywhere. That guy might be available. Could he help us? Like, I used to like to look at Thaddeus Young in Philly and try to debate whether or not he would really help the Pelicans, and he was obviously going to be available. But I look at Orlando and Philadelphia, and there aren't a lot of guys on those teams that I'm just like, I would want to go after that guy. There's a couple, but that's the most I could say.
Yeah.
So third team in the Eastern Conference for me, Boston.
Huh. I disagree with you here, but okay.
Okay. So, and here's my whole theory in Boston is, I already think that a lot of their players have hit their ceilings, and I don't expect to see Rajon Rondo play more than a month there. I really think he's going to be traded. When he is playing, he's going to be disinterested. I went back and watched some old Pelicans games that I had recorded. One of them was the game, the big game for Anthony Davis, where he went for 40 and 22 or whatever his rebounds were, 40 and 20 maybe. And Rondo, he didn't care. He really didn't. there was a lot of guys on that floor who were playing pretty hard for the Celtics. Rondo wasn't one of them. Avery Bradley was, you know, that guy would kill himself on every possession if you let him to stop the other team. Rondo was, you know, maybe three plays he got annoyed and then tried, and that was about it. So even if he's playing, I don't expect him to be particularly special for them. And Jeff Green, we've had this conversation before. Jeff Green is a perfectly average small forward in the league, and everything he does, he just gets to take more shots than some others do, so he seems better. There's just nothing on this team. And, like, do you think that Sullinger and Olynyk are going to be better basketball players than they were last year? Chris Humphreys is gone. He wasn't bad. I mean, Marcus Smart is their only possible shining moment for them. And I think he is going to be one of those guys who really has to be brought along slowly. I think of Marcus Smart as Baron Davis in a lot of ways, the way I compare him to a basketball player. And Baron was not particularly good his first year in the NBA. He had his moments, but he had to come along and figure out how he was going to play. And I think Smart's going to be the same way.
Yeah, but Rondo's no David Wesley, and that's what held Davis, Baron Davis, back the first year. the funny thing to me about this team is, you know, the Pelicans obviously played them twice, one game none of us want to remember because of Rhino. But, they play them twice. And watching the team, I'm like, this would be a team that I would be scared of if they had some outside shooting. So what do they do with their biggest two moves? They get Marcus Smart and Evan Turner, the opposite of shooters.
Well, they did get Marcus Thornton.
All right, yeah, those were throw-ins. They got Marcus Thornton, they got James Young, who, you know, theoretically could be good shooters, but I mean of guys who are likely to get significant time. I don't think Marcus Thornton really gets off the bench with all the guards that are on this team. But there's a dark horse for SNL fans. There's a guy on the training camp roster named Rodney Magruder. So who knows what he could offer. Rodney Magruder, a name to look out for. But I really think they're a team that's like one or two shooters away from being tough. I mean, Sullinger's a beast on the defensive boards. Olynyk is a hard player to defend. He's not really conventional. Brandon Bass brings you intensity. Avery Bradley, you know, could pressure your point guard and really cause you problems. I thought they were a couple of shooters away from being decent. I think they're still going to be better than you think. I don't think Rondo gets traded. Who trades for him? I think they hold on. I think they explore and look all year, but at the end of the day, I don't really think anybody gives up anything for him. So I think he stays, and I think this is a slightly better team than you think it is.
I think Sacramento makes a play for Rondo and goes after him and gets him, and then he leaves at the end of the year because he wants to stay in Sacramento.
I just don't see how that works. What does Sacramento give up that Boston takes?
Darren Collison. Boston's not trying to get good.
Yeah, but they're not trying to.
Sacramento can offer them.
They're not
offer them McLemore, Collison, and a pick.
And you think Sacramento does that for a rental in a year in which they're not going to even make the playoffs?
I bet they can convince themselves that they think they can keep Rondo.
All right, yeah, see, that's where I disagree. I mean, they make the most sense, but unless they go super all in since the guys are friends and find out a way to get Rondo and Josh Smith, which would be just so Sacramento.
That'd be awesome. That'd be the most interesting team in the world.
I have a feeling that your next team is the team that I think is the 13th best in the East. But let me hear it. Who do you think's who's next on your list?
Actually, I think you're not at all going to pick this team.
Ooh, I already know where you're going. All right, go ahead.
Indiana.
Not true. You know. Okay, go ahead. Let me hear.
So, they lost every semblance of offensive talent they had. I am the biggest David West fan around, and David West cannot carry a team at this point in his career offensively to save his life. He can't. He won't be able to. You can count on him to play, to hit a few big shots for you at times and to make a few big plays for you, but you cannot count on him to carry a team offensively at all. Hibbert is a disaster offensively. If you're going to him, if they have the idea that they're going to add five shots to Hibbert's world and he's going to produce anything for them, they're nuts. He cannot do it. He is not an offensive player to save his life. George Hill isn't an offensive player. And the two guys that they have on the wings aren't offensive. This team is going to be historically bad offensively. And I fully expect that their defense, missing Stevenson and Paul George, is still going to be maybe top 10. I wouldn't be surprised if it fell just a little bit out of the top 10. I think that, I mean, when you take a team that's probably going to have like a defensive rating of like 102 or 101, but an offensive rating of like 94. I mean, I really think this is going to be one of the worst offensive teams I've seen in a while.
I don't mean this is an insult, but this is the part where your analytics and your fandom of the game and the way you observe it and analyze it is just so wrong.
Okay.
I want a huge bet on this. Whatever we could figure out, you think Indiana is going to be. There's no way to quantify culture. There's no way to talk about, you know, guys who are used to winning just refusing to let this happen. And I can't point to anything. I mean, you're right. Roy Hibbert was, especially after All-Star break, terrible. I think he'll be a good offensive player this year. I think Rodney Stuckey will be incredibly or much more efficient. I mean, you look at a team like the Chicago Bulls, and has what they done the last 2 years made any sense on paper?
Somewhat.
No, it has. I mean, they lost for huge stretches. They lost the MVP of the league. They would lose Luol Deng. Noah would go down. I mean, look at what they had in that Nets series. But you can't really quantify a lot of things. It's more about culture and teams and players who expect to win and an organization that expects to win and is used to winning. Like, you take pieces out of there, but you know, they took Danny Granger out of there and Paul George stepped up, and I don't know. On paper, there's nothing I could throw at you. There's no stats I could throw at you, but this team is not coming anywhere near 13th place. They'll be in the playoff hunt all year, and I wouldn't even be shocked if they made it. I think I don't even know what the rest of your list holds, but this is so wrong, and I'm glad that you feel this way, and I called you out on it, because you will believe in culture after this season.
All right. I hope so. It's kind of sad to think of them going this bad.
I mean, like, but Chris Copeland, watch. Chris Copeland and or Chris Singleton will look like real NBA players this year. Like, the guys will step up that won't make any sense to you, just the way that DJ Augustine had 1 foot out the door, and then all of a sudden he's a star for the Chicago Bulls. Like, I'm telling you, you'll see, and you will believe in culture and organization over numbers and individual players, all because of this Indiana team. I can't wait.
Okay. We'll see.
All right.
All right.
Who's next? The team that you should have put at 13 is next. Go ahead.
I had a real hard time with this one. So can I hedge and say two teams?
Sure.
No. All right, I'm not going to do that. I'll say Milwaukee.
Thank you. Finally.
So I think Milwaukee, first off, I don't think Larry Sanders can have as bad of a year as he did last year.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he returns to average form, that's going to help tremendously. I don't buy into the whole, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Uh-oh.
Is going to be the next super mega almost awesome star. I don't buy that stuff people are selling, because I haven't seen enough of it, or even when I watched him, I wasn't like, wow, he's amazing. So I have a hard time believing he's going to be anything in the next 2 or 3 years. But I think Parker is going to be a pretty darn good basketball player. I think there's enough here that they're going to be better than these teams that have just either they're not trying particularly hard, or they're just so crippled that they can't go any further. So I expect Milwaukee to be next.
Yeah, I think so many players on this roster have, I think Ilyasova is checked out.
I think
OJ Mayo's checked out. I don't think we see another season from Chris Middleton. Like we saw, I think Jared Dudley is definitely, you know, he'll be next to check out, or just be trying to get out of there. I don't know. I mean, we've talked about how bad, you know, that Pelicans finishing five unit could be defensively. I think almost every unit that Milwaukee puts out there will be that bad defensively.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, they've got a nice individual pieces in Sanders and Henson, but I don't know how much those guys could play together, and I don't see anything on the perimeter. And then again, if you've got to give a lot of the minutes that would otherwise go to Henson or Sanders, you got to give it to Parker, who's now playing the four. Like, yeah, I think this is going to be a terrible defensive team. Kendall Marshall's not going to help that. I mean, yeah, I think it's going to be a really bad defensive team.
Yeah, you know what I actually think of this team as, what I would compare it to is last year's Lakers. So I have a feeling that they're going to be,
yeah,
some nights their offense is going to, just because of the kind of players they have, they're going to have some guys that are going to catch fire.
I mean, really, though, can you see anybody on this team? Like, you really see a guy who could go off for 30 on this team?
I think, like, Parker.
A good 30?
I think, yeah, I think that Parker can definitely do it.
I don't think he has the 3-point shot yet. I mean, I think he could score 30 on 26 shots.
Okay.
Yeah, I would even venture to possibly put them 14th. I could see, to me, when you said toss up, to me it's a toss up between the Magic and Bucks for 14th.
Okay. You think Boston's better?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, let's go to my next team. I am selecting your Brooklyn Nets.
No. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I like all these curveballs. All right.
I do not believe. So let's go back to last year.
Okay.
Before Brook Lopez got injured, who, by the way, is the savior of the Nets this year. Brook Lopez is going to come back from injury, and he and Deron Williams are going to have a renaissance, and they're going to take this team to the playoffs.
I think Fletcher Mackel disagrees with you. He would say Sergei Karasev.
Okay. But last year, when they were actually playing with Brook Lopez on the team as their starting center before he got injured, they were awful. Absolutely rock awful defensively. They were extremely mediocre offensively. And I believe 100% that Paul Pierce was the heart and soul of this team. And he's not there anymore. And they didn't replace him with anything. And they lost Sean Livingston, who was an important piece for them. I 100% believe that this team is going to take a major nosedive. I think Joe Johnson stopped being an important basketball player a year, probably 2 years ago. I think Deron Williams, if you're relying on him to do anything good for you at this point, other than maybe have one or two games that are throwbacks, I think you're stupid. And I don't think Brook Lopez is actually a franchise player.
What's the biggest upgrade they made? And so you talk about the downgrades. What's the biggest upgrade they made this offseason?
Well, let me take a look at their roster. See, now you're going to trick me, aren't you?
Yep, because you're already looking in the wrong place.
Probably. I don't know. You can't say Jarrett Jack. Is Bojan Bogdanovic going to be that good? I don't think so.
Yeah, you're making the classic mistake. It has nothing to do with their roster. They went from Jason Kidd to Lionel Hollins.
So you think that's going to matter that much?
I think when you talk about Lopez last year, a big part of it, that to blame it on Lopez and to say he was the reason they said that whole thing was a train wreck as Jason Kidd was getting started, and you had the problem with Lawrence Frank, and Kidd was way in over his head. And I agree that Paul Pierce was probably the biggest thing that helped right that ship, but the ship's not going to have to be righted with a competent coach and a coach, you know, who I think is more defensive oriented and, I think has some decent pieces here. I think he'll definitely be able to utilize a guy like Kirilenko more. I think you're going to see a lot of lineups with Mason Plumlee and Brook Lopez side by side. And I think that'll be a nice defensive lineup that also, you know, is good enough offensively with Plumlee, being able to play around the rim and Lopez step out a little bit. And I believe so much in that upgrade and that change in philosophy of Kidd to Hollins. I think that was worth more than whatever losing Joe Johnson takes away. Paul Pierce. I think that they're as good as last year, and I wouldn't be shocked if they ended up with a better regular season record.
No, I'm not buying it. I'm sorry. I don't. I mean, everybody on this team is just flat out going to be downhill. I mean, I can't look at a single player on this team and say, except for Brook Lopez, if he manages to play for the whole season.
Mason Plumlee.
You think Mason Plumlee is going to be a lot better than last year?
I think he could be. I mean, I think.
I don't think so.
I think that was a huge boost to his confidence. I mean, we can't go and give like these FIBA credit for helping players and then exclude certain ones. I mean, I think that this summer helped him a lot.
I just feel like he's already where he's going to be. I don't think he's going to get a lot better. I think he's hit a ceiling.
Yeah, I think him playing with Lopez, I think he could be a monster on the offensive glass and, you know, be in Rome even more as a defender. It's interesting because obviously I've disagreed with you a lot, so I see some teams falling that you probably see rising or staying steady. But
yeah.
Brooklyn, I think anything they lost personnel-wise, they more than made up for with a huge coach upgrade. And, you know, I like Jared Jack as much, if not more, than Livingston. I like him more on the offensive end, less defensively. So, yeah, Pierce will be tough, but I disagree. I think Joe Johnson's numbers are never going to be what they once were, but I still think he's an impactful player, and I expect his numbers to go up a little bit now with Pierce gone as well.
Okay. So then I suppose this next team I'm going to say you probably think is further down the list. I'm taking New York next.
Yeah.
The New York Knickerbockers.
I definitely think Brooklyn and Indiana finish out of New York.
Okay. So, I mean, the way I look at New York is they're still – they haven't really upgraded or fixed a lot of their problems, but they don't have to worry about Raymond Felton. J.R. Smith's not going to play as bad as he was last year. I mean, he's still a moron, but he's not going to play as bad as he did last year. Calderon is going to help them. So I just think that they're going to be a little bit better than they were, and I think those other teams are going to fall a little more. Do you have anything interesting you want to say about New York? Or is New York really is like – they people talk about it so much because it's New York. But it is almost one of the least interesting basketball teams in the entire NBA right now.
Yeah, I'm really curious about it more from a front office perspective. Like, if they start off playing decent, do they get tempted to turn their expiring contracts into players and, like, get somebody this year? Can they really, you know, hold steady with the philosophy of let's just get to next summer? Or will they get impatient and pull the trigger? But I don't see it because I think, you know, I think bringing the triangle offense, I think, you know, having a coach that literally was just, I mean, it could be the same nightmare we saw with Jason Kidd, possibly even worse with Derek Fisher. I see some real turbulence ahead for this team.
I don't think it can be worse because Jason Kidd has, throughout his entire playing career, was kind of a schmuck and a backstabber. I don't think Fisher was that.
You think there's any chance our buddy Jason Smith starts on this team?
If he's healthy, absolutely.
Yeah.
Would you start Andre Bargnani over Jason Smith ever?
Well, I mean, I don't know. If you're putting Carmelo at the four, which I'm guessing they're going to do, but I have no clue. Your options at center would be Bargnani, Stoudemire, Dalembert, and Smith. I guess it just depends where you put Anthony, but you got a lot of options there, but to me, none of them stand up over the other. And, you know, Jason Smith is, well, I don't know, I guess Bargnani is too. I was going to say Phil Jackson in his Laker days and even early Lakers days with Travis Knight was always going to the big white center. So
you would figure, Will Perdue.
Yeah, Will Perdue, Luke Longley, Bill Winnington. So who knows? But, yeah, I think I could actually see Boston finishing ahead of the Knicks. I'm not a fan at all. So, yeah, I do have them way lower than you do.
You like Boston that much, huh?
I don't know if it's liking Boston. I think Boston has some serious talent. Like I said, they were a team that I usually think of this as the Pelicans are going to play this team tomorrow. And then I gauge my how afraid of my level. I would be more afraid of Boston than New York. So that's kind of how I do it.
Okay. Let's move on to the next team who I think you probably have lower than I do. Detroit. The Detroit Pistons. And so for those of you keeping track at home, that would make Detroit the final playoff team in the Eastern Conference for me. New York was ninth, Detroit is eighth. I will just flat out state, I think the same thing you said about Lionel Hollins, I think that Stan Van Gundy is going to have an impact. This team has enough talent that it shouldn't be as crappy as it is. It really shouldn't be. And if you can get the right guys to do the right things, and I think Stan Van Gundy is capable of doing that, and he obviously has a plan that he's paying a lot of money to implement, but he has a plan, I think that he'll do well enough that he'll turn this team into at least okay. I mean, he's paying a lot of money for those shooters, but he's now got the shooters, and if he can put together the sort of team like he had in Orlando where he has a couple guys in the front court who can do a bunch of different things for him and fill those needs of rebounding and scoring right around the rim while he has a lot of shooters spread the floor, I think he has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have them making the playoffs. I do like Indiana and Brooklyn more. But I think they make a moderate improvement. I don't know. I think he's kind of handcuffed by some things. Like, personally, I might like this team better without Brandon Jennings. Like, if they just removed him from the roster.
I would love it more. I agree. I think Brandon Jennings is a joke.
And if I had DJ Augustine and Will Bynum as my two point guards, like, I'd feel better about that. But I think that Jennings is going to have to play minutes just because of the salary he has. And, you know, then again, you've got this weird thing with Josh Smith, Monroe, and Drummond. You know, Monroe's not going to want to come off the bench. Smith, you know, good luck with how he takes that. So, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't mind a Will Bynum, Jody Meeks, Kyle Singler, and then pick two of the big men starting lineup. If I'm using this team on NBA 2K, I guess I'm saying I think I could make it work. I don't know if it's possible in real life. So, you know, and they're always one Andre Drummond injury away, or on the days Andre Drummond doesn't play. You know, I think they're really a low-level team. You take him off the roster. So I could see them being dangerous on a given night, but I would still put Brooklyn and Indiana above them from the teams you had.
I'll tell you my theory here about how what's happening in the front court there. I would be willing to bet you that the reason why the whole Greg Monroe saga ended the way it did, with him just taking the qualifying offer and putting all of his baskets in next year, is he was just flat out told that he was not going to be getting starters minutes or even be a starter on this team.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then
that means Drummond and Smith is your center power forward. Do you think that's, I think that's, if you're just looking in a vacuum at just this year, right now, I think your best start two players are Drummond and Smith at power forward center.
Yeah, if you could get Smith to play the right way, yeah, I guess that's the thing I believe less in, is that you could get Smith or Jennings to play the right way. You could get Monroe motivated to come off the bench. You know, you could get Caron Butler to give a damn after what he experienced with Oklahoma City last year. So that's what I'm not buying.
Okay. Next team. And I thought about putting them a little higher because I love their center. But I just can't do it. So Atlanta Hawks, number 7, Eastern Conference. Al Horford, he's coming back from injury. This will be the second time he's torn a pectoral muscle, and hopefully he won't be tearing. I guess he's only got two, so he can't tear any more of them, right? So, and I really am a big fan of Horford. I really am a fan of the way they're making this team play, and the kind of, but I mean, you have to counterbalance that with the fact they still only won 38 games last year. So is Horford worth 6 or 7 wins? Probably. And that's about all I'll give them.
Yeah.
You got anything exciting to say about Atlanta that has nothing to do with all of their off the court crap that went on this year?
No, I think this is probably going to be the next team that we disagree on the most.
Really?
I could see a legit scenario in which Atlanta gets home court. I think that they are.
Well, okay. Before we say that, what? How many wins do you think takes home court advantage? So fourth seed in the Eastern Conference. How many wins do you think you have to get?
I think well, not to spoil it, but I think that there's two definite 55 win teams. So then I think it would take like 47, 48.
Okay. Last year it took 48.
And I mean, I think Horford's worth a couple of wins. I think, and granted, this guy only missed 11 games, but I think they went 1-10 without him in those 11. Kyle Korver is this team. The team changes so much without him, and we saw the benefit of that when the Pelicans played Atlanta and Korver actually got hurt in warmups beforehand, and you just get to play them so differently without Korver on the court. I think he's huge. I think Damari Carroll took a step last year, and I don't see any reason why he doesn't take another. Mike Scott. I think that they have a lot of players that fit their system. I don't think that their players individually terrify you, but I think they are one of those quintessential, the sum is greater than their parts teams. And, I see them as a definite playoff team, and I see them as fighting for home court advantages, as long as, again, this is the caveat with all teams, they stay relatively healthy. I think they brought in a guy in Adrian Payne who is one of the few rookies that could contribute right away and is, like, literally perfect for their system in every single way and could play a couple minutes. It's unfortunate that they had the issues. I would have felt way more confident. I would have called them as a 3 or 4 seed, if not for all these recent issues and not knowing how that's going to affect their locker room. But before that happened, I thought that they were going to be the surprise team in the NBA and a 3 or 4 seed. And I'm hoping that, all this stuff kind of motivates them more than eats up the locker room. And I'm going to stick with that.
Okay. My next team, and this will be number 6 in the Eastern Conference, is the Charlotte Bobcats. Oh, wait, they're not the Charlotte Bobcats, the Charlotte Hornets. I gotta screw that up so many times, which is stupid. Charlotte Hornets, who, by the way, have a hive design on their new court. I'm trying to figure out if this could be distracting or not, but anyways, the Charlotte Hornets, they're not really – they don't have a whole lot of guys who I think are going to suddenly improve and propel them anywhere. I don't buy the whole – I'm sure every single year for the next 5 years you're going to hear a story that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is suddenly going to be able to shoot. And let's just face it, he's never going to be able to shoot. He may be able to be an okay shooter at some point from, like, mid-range – but he's never going to be a guy who you want to be a shooter. They brought in Lance Stephenson, who can be both a distraction and a bonus. I tend to think he's a little bit more of a bonus than a negative. So I think they'll play a little better than they did last year. But, I don't see them as a team that's suddenly going to be catapulting anywhere. They're probably going to pick up like 3 or 4 more wins than they did last year, which would put them around 47, 48. They'll take the 6th seed.
In my opinion, this is my surprise, I guess probably surprise of the year, at least in the Eastern Conference. I don't think the Charlotte Hornets make the playoffs.
Wow, because they have Brian Roberts?
No, I think
they have Brian Roberts and Marvin Williams, your two least favorite players of all time.
I think a lot of last year was almost everything that could. So you think about it, even when we do this as the Pelicans, I mean, we say like 15 if things at the beginning of the year. If this happens, if that doesn't happen, if this happens, whatever. I think that's with every team, and I think Charlotte hit on most of theirs last year.
Except for Cody Zeller.
Yeah, right. I don't believe Lance Stephenson and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist are going to be able to play together. I don't know if that means now you move Marvin Williams into the three or you try to play Henderson there. I think if you really want to see where this team took off, it's when they added Gary Neal and he gave them just enough offensive punch as in his role. He was a spot-up shooter. Lance Stephenson's not going to be satisfied with that. He's going to want the ball in his hands too. I think that he's going to take away some touches from Jefferson. Like, I think that they added, I mean, obviously Lance Stephenson was better than what they had there before.
Right.
But I don't think he was the right fit either on the court or, you know, having to deal with chemistry issues. Jeffrey Taylor has a domestic abuse problem now. I don't like the Marvin Williams signing. I don't think Noah Vonleh is mature enough to be able to make any impact this year. I think a lot of things went right last year. If I try to take last year out of the equation and just look on, you know, I guess I don't think about it like that. I don't think about it like, oh, they're going to win three more games than last year because literally, I mean, things just aren't tied together like that, at least in my mind. So I don't even care about last year. I'm looking at what I see this year, and I think that a lot of people are going to pencil them in either for a jump or as a definite playoff team, and I feel pretty confident that Charlotte won't make the playoffs.
Okay.
So
we'll see.
Yeah, we disagree a lot, which is fun.
Yeah. All right, so my next team, and this team gets a lot of love, but I think that they're going to be the fifth seed, and that's the Washington Wizards.
Wizards.
So, I don't know. In a lot of ways, Bradley Beal is being anointed as the next great, you know, shooting guard, and yeah, you always loved him coming out of the college, and I wasn't that high on him. I look at him, and I think he could become pretty good. I just don't see him and Wall being able to, you know, propel this team to a 50-win, you know, kind of season. And while I love Paul Pierce, he is at the higher, you know, the end of his career. I don't think he's going to be like a major boost to them. And number one reason I don't think they're going to be like suddenly a 50-win team is if you're banking on Nene to give you as many games as he did last year, you're stupid because Nene is usually injured for significant portions of the season. And while they can absorb that a little bit, I expect that he'll go back to his normal, I need to miss 30 games this year kind of ways.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that they've, you know, added some depth, which I think is good in case or if and when that does happen. I think Humphreys was nice. I think Blair was, you know, a nice addition. Gooden came in at the end of last year and really gave them some solid minutes. So I think they got that. You could obviously play Pierce at the four as well. I really think this team, whether or not they can make another small leap is dependent on whether Otto Porter or Glenn Rice can be a quality role player for them. I mean, I think that in total, you subtract Ariza and you add Pierce and again, either Porter or Rice giving you significant minutes. I think you could actually see an upgrade, even though Ariza had a terrific season last year. You could see an upgrade on the wing. So, I think they did some nice things. I think that Wall, yeah, he might even add a little bit. I think when you're looking at Wall and Beal, I don't know if their numbers grow that much more, but I still think that you could become a better basketball player, and it doesn't reflect in your raw numbers. So, I just have him one spot higher, but.
Yeah, and I mean, I think about Beal, too. I'm being hard on him, but he has the same sort of thing to me as Klay Thompson. Like, he's just kind of, he's got the scoring numbers, and if you look at his shooting numbers, you're like, wow, he's 40% from three and on almost five attempts, and you feel like he's like a really majorly impactful player, and in some games he can score a bunch, but when he only gives you not even four rebounds and three assists, he doesn't even get a steal a game in 34 minutes. I mean, he's not an all-around impactful player. He is a scorer for you, and that's all you're going to get from him. And even his scoring efficiency last year was really weak because he never got to the free throw line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he'll improve. I think he's going to improve, and he'll probably be a better player. But, I mean, these are the kind of guys who are like the Rip Hamilton players. Like, Rip Hamilton was an 18-4-4 kind of player. And if you surround him with a bunch of guys who can do a lot of other things, that guy is really valuable to you because he can get you the points you need. He is a point specialist while your other guys are rebounding specialists and defense. Like, but he's not the guy who's going to propel you. He's going to be the guy who is a very nice compliment.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see the Pearson Wall dynamic. Like, end of game, last possession. Who do you think who do they put the ball in which guy's hands?
Yeah, I have no idea.
So that'll be interesting. But I really do like what they did with their front court, anticipating what's probably going to be some injuries and giving them some depth there. I think I have them in the same range. I probably have who you have flip-flopped with them.
I doubt it. I really doubt you have my next team flip-flopped with them.
Oh, God, you're going to say Chicago. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm saying Chicago.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, and we've had this conversation before. And so I'm saying they're a four seed. And I cannot buy the hype. What I have seen is Derrick Rose is not a good basketball player right now.
Okay.
And I fully expect that he will remain not a good basketball for a good portion of basketball player for a good portion of the season. And when I'm saying not a good basketball player, I'm not saying he's going to be out there and playing average basketball and you can play around him and be okay. I think he will actually be a negative to this team for a significant portion of the season.
Wow.
I mean, he was, in my opinion, awful in the international basketball. I mean, every time he was out there, it was painful to watch him. For the 15 games he played last year where he was supposedly healthy, he was really awful. I don't see why we think that suddenly, because he's had another injury, came back and played some awful basketball over the summer, he's going to now enter the NBA and return to good. I really think it's going to take a long time, and I think he's going to – I'm not saying he won't ever be good. I have a feeling he will never be amazing like he was at one point. But I don't buy that at all. I think he's going to be a net negative to their record for the first part of the season.
So who would you take for this year and this year only? Derrick Rose or Kemba Walker?
Kemba Walker.
Okay. So, yeah, so we disagree.
Then the rest of Chicago, like, I understand that Chicago is a gritty, hardworking team. They're going to play really hard out there. They're going to do some impressive things, but you got to flat out remember they weren't actually that much better than average last year overall. They outscored opponents by an average of 1.9 points per game. This wasn't a team that rode an amazing defense to, like, defeat team after team after team. They won 48 games. And while I'm never going to disagree that Pau Gasol isn't an upgrade over Carlos Boozer, at this point in Pau Gasol's career, I don't think he's an amazing upgrade over Carlos Boozer. I think he's a little bit of an upgrade over Carlos Boozer. And I don't think McDermott's going to be suddenly better than an average basketball player. I don't see him coming into the NBA and being able to be better than average. He's a good shooter. So I'm not looking at a team that made any big, huge upgrades to its team. And they played a ton of minutes.
He was an MVP a couple of years ago, but yeah.
What's that?
So for adding a guy who was an MVP a couple of years ago.
He's terrible right now. He's terrible.
Yeah. No. Okay.
So, I don't see them being able to suddenly push for 50 wins. I think they're going to still be a sub-50 win team.
Yeah, I've said it before, this is my Eastern Conference favorite. They're the team that, if I had to put money on right now, I would bet to win the Eastern Conference. Again, Pau Gasol versus Carlos Boozer one-on-one or in a vacuum or whatever the stats say, yeah, it's not a huge difference. But the way the two guys play, the skill sets that this team could utilize, they might have the two best passing big men in the entire league now on one team. And we see that the Bulls give Noah the freedom to do that. And, you know, the high-low combinations with Noah Gasol, just if you're a fan of basketball, should just make you giddy. And, you know, small little under-the-radar acquisitions like Aaron Brooks, who could be a poor man's DJ Augustine when Rose doesn't have it going on a given night. You know, possible improvement from a guy that I liked at least in the draft last year and Tony Snell. Is Doug McDermott going to be a good NBA player? No, but it's not just about who you are individually. It's can you be good in the role your team needs you to be good in? And what this team needs is shooters, or at least guys who have the threat of shooting to open it up for other people. So, again, I just think it's so much more than looking at individuals, but looking at the sum. And I just, this is my Eastern Conference favorite and a team that I fully expect to get the number one seed.
Okay. I didn't mention this. I also expect that Noah won't play as many games as he did last year. And I think that will matter. Because if you look over the last 5 years, his games played are 64, 48, 64, 66, and 80 last year.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's nice to have such another great passing big man in Gasol you could put in. You slide Mirotic up to the third big, and, you know, so.
Okay. My next team, Miami.
Benito Amiami.
I think that they're going to be the third seed. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. If Dwayne Wade falls apart, this team is going to be more like a 7 seed if they can't get a decent season out of Dwayne Wade. But I think that they're good enough. They're got enough veteran people who know what they're doing. They brought in enough additional parts to help out. I think this is a team that could still, I mean, Bosch is going to have a pretty good season. I just feel like they're still going to be right up there for a third seed. Where do you have them?
Yeah, I mean, I have them as a third seed as well. And I wouldn't even be shocked if they finished with a better regular season record than the Cavs. But, I mean, one of the interesting questions for me is the NBA Twitter fan, the guy who, you know, has all the opinions in the world, what are the odds that the overwhelming majority says, because I don't think anybody's saying this now, but that by the end of the year that Chris Bosh is better than Kevin Love? I just feel like we start to hear that narrative. I think Chris Bosh goes back and has a terrific season again now that he doesn't have to sacrifice for LeBron. I think Love, it's the exact inverse. And all of a sudden, you know, whenever the Cavs lose, he's the guy getting the majority of the blame. I think the narrative will be flipped amongst the people who think they know so much on social media and people will be calling Bosch a better player than Kevin Love by the end of the year.
I could easily see that happen because when we get to Cleveland, I'll talk about this a little more. But, yeah, I could. That wouldn't be that surprising.
The other thing I think about this Miami team, it just makes me remember, and you're going to laugh, but a big reason why I have Charlotte out of the playoffs is the fact that they lost Josh McRoberts.
I love Josh McRoberts.
I really thought he was a glue piece that kind of held a lot of the weird fit parts of their team together. I don't know if he's going to be as valuable in Miami or if they're going to know how to use him right away. But he, you know, just reminded me he's a big reason why I have Charlotte out of the playoffs. Otherwise, here, you know, I don't know. I'm not as big into the whole Dwayne Wade fell off the face of the earth narrative. I mean, he had huge games in the Eastern Conference Finals. As human beings, we tend to remember what happened at last. And he was terrible in the finals, but Manu Ginobili was terrible in the finals 2 years ago. Don't always just remember the last thing that you heard or saw. Look at the complete body of work, and Dwayne Wade was still a top three shooting guard in the NBA last year. The Heat have nice depth at point guard. I think, you know, a lot was taken away. I mean, you're a point guard all your life, and now all of a sudden you're playing with LeBron. These guys had to play different than they had used to, and I think a lot of guys sacrificed, and rightfully so, but sacrificed their individual games to play with LeBron, and I think that you could see at least one or two guys really break out this season now that they get to have a little bit more freedom and play their own game. So I got them as a 3 seed and really wouldn't be shocked if they jumped Cleveland and were the 2 seed in the East.
Okay. So since you have Cleveland number 2.
Wait, let me ask you one question real quick. If Paul George never gets injured, where would you have put Indiana?
Probably 5 seed.
5, and you have them 12th or 13th?
Let's see, 11th.
11th, yeah. All right. Sorry, just wanted to ask that. All right.
So I have a team that you probably have been waiting to hear from me for a while as my number 2 in the East, because Cleveland, I have number 1. I have Toronto 2nd.
Yeah, I have them 5th.
Okay. And
they have Steamsma.
They have Steamsma. And honestly, I didn't realize they had Steamsma until I happened to look. So I'm really, really wavering now on having them in the 2nd spot. But I'm going to tell you there's one and only one reason why I have them as high as they are on my list. They don't have to play 20 games with Rudy Gay this year. And after Rudy Gay left, and this team pretty much returns almost the exact same team, plus Steamsma. I'll get past that in a second. When they got rid of Rudy Gay and what they played the rest of the year was extremely good basketball. They were a very efficient team on both sides of the court. I'm a little worried that maybe Lowry is a contract year kind of player, but I think I'm past it for him. So I'm 100% in that this team is going to play, you know, as well as they did the last three quarters of last season, and will be able to pull off some pretty nice regular season magic and be a 2 seed and win something like 53-52 games.
Yeah, this is my Golden State from last year. This is the team that I think that everybody remembers the year before, and a lot of things broke right, and they expect them to get better, and I expect them to get worse. Like, I don't even know if I would have them as a 5 seed. But I think a lot of things went right. You said Lowry was in a contract year. Vasquez pretty much was. Patrick Patterson, like a lot of guys who had a lot to prove, especially after that Rudy Gay trade. And, you know, I think a lot of things really broke well. I think DeRozan isn't as good of a player as his numbers tend to indicate he is, at least his raw numbers.
He's a volume dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I see the other case. I could see a scenario in which Lou Williams is an upgrade as their fourth guard and Terrence Ross takes another step forward and Valanciunas, they finally figure out how to use them right. It's just I just have a bad feeling about this team. I feel like a lot of things went well out there. A lot of guys were playing for contracts. They go out and made the most head-scratching draft pick, you know, I had seen. And in all my years following the NBA draft, I had never seen a first-round pick that just literally comes out of nowhere. I mean,
Whoa. You watched the Hornets pick Kirk Haston.
Oh, I knew him. He was a solid player at Indiana. Like, he scored. He put up numbers. Bruno, like...
Nobody thought he was going even in the first round.
I wouldn't say that.
But you're right. Bruno, no... Like, yeah. Okay.
Nobody thought he was going. So, yeah, I don't know. I definitely don't see two seed. I see their ceiling is four and their floor is nine. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if they missed the playoffs, but I think they're more likely to be in that 6-7 range.
Okay. And let's talk about my number one, who you think's number two, possibly number three. Is that where yours was settled?
Yeah, I would probably bet on number two, but.
So you guys might have heard about this, but Cleveland had a little bit of an upgrade this year. And they have LeBron and Kevin Love and Deion Waiters and Kyrie Irving, and they're all playing basketball, and supposedly they're now the super mega team from Mars. So there is a lot that has to be figured out here. And LeBron is always already making it pretty clear that he's going to be resting a little more than he did in Miami, like saying stuff like, oh, my back's bothering me, maybe I won't play as much, or maybe I won't do back-to-backs. I think he watched Dwayne Wade relax, and now he's like, now I get to go somewhere else, and I can just pretty much say, hey, you guys carry me a little bit. If you don't like it, I'm on a one-year contract, bitch. And so I fully expect that they're going to be the number one seed. I don't think that this particular roster couldn't possibly do any worse than 55 wins. So they're my number one seed, because Toronto, I'm thinking, is going to be doing like 52 or 53. So Cleveland ends up being by default number one. I don't think that they're a super team that's unstoppable. I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains there. I think Kyrie Irving is in for a monster awakening. But I still think that they've just got so much talent. There's no way they can't help but get 55 wins. What do you think? Why do you think that they could be a second or third team just because of growing pains?
I mean, first of all, I don't think they're as talented as others tend to. I've read that Kyrie, Love, and LeBron are so much better than, you know, the Miami three. And I don't think that's true at all. I don't think, as I've already said, I don't think Love is the player that Bosch was ever in Miami. I think all four seasons of Miami Heat Bosch are better than Kevin Love. And I don't think Kyrie Irving is the player that Wade has ever been. The other concern here is, who are the two most injury-prone players on this team?
Most injury? Oh, Kyrie Irving's injury-prone.
Who else?
Oh, well, and Andy Anderson Varejao.
All right, now your next homework assignment is to tell me the backup point guard and the backup center on this team.
Dellavedova. I know, isn't he the backup point guard?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's him. Who's the backup center? I would assume it's going to end up being Tristan Thompson.
Though
he's not really a center.
Yeah, it's probably like Lou Amundsen, Brendan Hayward. Yeah, I guess you could play Thompson there. My point is your two most injury-prone players are also – I mean, they went and added all of these wings, Sean Marion, Mike Miller, James Jones. They're trying to bring in Ray Allen. They have all this depth at 2 and 3 and even at the 4 position with Tristan Thompson. Their two most injury-prone players, they have nothing behind those guys. You know, so that's a worry. Deion Waiters is, you know, I mean, he does have talent, more talent, probably more raw talent than any fourth member of any of the Miami Heat team. But I would still take old man Ray Allen over Deion Waiters as far as trying to win games, not raw talent. So I don't know. I mean, I see a lot more holes than I guess most people do. I think it's going to take a little while to gel, but I think, you know, people look at they see LeBron put up 27, Love put up 26, and Irving put up 21. And I think they just assume that those things will be similar. At least one of those guys is in for a huge dip. And I mean, they were all very good players on their own teams, but again, the two other guys, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving has literally never been an important game in his entire life. A playoff game, an NCAA tournament game, an ACC tournament game, like nothing. Kevin Love has been in a couple of NCAA tournament games. Other than that, you know, they just have no clue. And if Kyrie Irving and Deion Waiters were so talented, I mean, they didn't even come close to sniffing the playoffs in a terrible Eastern Conference last year. I mean, I know obviously they had upgrades, but we're not talking about whether or not the Cavs will be a good team. We're talking about whether they'll be the number one team and the team to represent this conference in the finals. And I just don't see it. If I had to pick one team to be on NBA 2K, I would pick them, but the world doesn't work, or, you know, the NBA doesn't work that way. So I'm not a believer.
Okay. I think that they're going to be good enough. I mean, you're saying that comparing them to the Heat, I agree 100% that Irving is not even close to what Dwayne Wade ever was. And I also agree that Bosch peak years defensively is probably better than anything Kevin Love can approach by a significant margin. I think Kevin Love's offensive game is a little bit more versatile and will probably be better than what Bosch used to do. So I think they're about a wash.
Look at
LeBron's older.
Look at Chris Bosch's numbers in Toronto and Love's numbers in Minnesota. It'll freak you out how similar they are. And I'm telling you, Love's in for the same thing. People are going to make the big 2.5 jokes, and it'll be at Love's expense. I mean, you got to sacrifice when you're going to be playing with LeBron and Kyrie, and Love's numbers are about to take a major dip. And when this team loses, he'll be the guy that they blame, just like Bosch. But the difference is that he won't be able to compensate for the lost numbers with the defense like Bosch could do. At least the smart people who know what they're watching when they watch basketball could see that Bosch had a big impact on the defensive end. You won't be able to even point to that with Love. I mean, who do you think's the better big three? LeBron the first year he went to Miami, or LeBron this year with these three?
LeBron the first year.
In Miami?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I mean, yes. And the reason why is because I think LeBron will be taking it easy this year, more than he did the last couple of years. I think LeBron in Miami was there to prove a point. And I think now LeBron is in Cleveland to get something done, but he's not there to prove that during the regular season like he did before. So I think LeBron will be less impactful in the regular season than he was when he was in Miami.
And do you see any chance Yeah, I mean, it's different because it's not with age, but even before the age crept in, just with fit. I mean, there's always the surprises. Like, do you see a Phoenix? Like, who would be your Phoenix possibility in this East? A team that we're totally writing off that all of a sudden is a, you know, shoots out and surprises everybody. Who would be your Phoenix candidate?
Boston.
And do you see even a 1% chance of Cleveland doing something similar to what that Dream Team Lakers unit did? The unit that everybody was predicting 65-70 wins for, that barely made the playoffs. I mean, is there even a 1% chance that, I mean, we just assume what you put.
Well, I mean, the big weakness of that team was it had no defense to speak of. And Cleveland could very well be a very poor defensive team. I don't think it's that likely because they've got some smart players on their team who could probably, you know.
Who's smart on the team?
Cobble. LeBron.
Who else?
Sean Marion. Mike Miller. Andy Varejo. They're going to not. If people are doing stupid crap, like, I expect both Irving and Waiters are going to get their asses chewed out a couple times by those guys.
And, I mean, you assume that that'll put them in their place and they'll respond positively. What if it goes the other way?
Well, if it goes the other way, then you have the Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I don't think people have, like, the same way that they didn't really think about how bad it could be in L.A. I don't think, I mean, that Miami team, they was built on defense. They took three guys who at that time were, you know, close to elite or elite defenders, and they took a coach who was going to be all about defensive first, and then they were going to make the offense work. The other way, like, it's not a guaranteed path to success in the NBA that we're just going to have this super offense and we'll figure out the defense. Like, that's usually the formula that blows up and people go, oh, we didn't expect this, you know, halfway into the season and that team's struggling. So I don't know. I mean, of course, all my pessimism about Cleveland's going to look stupid when they're great. I just don't think it's as much of a cinch as I guess other people. Again, if we're playing NBA 2K, I pick Cleveland, hands down. But in real life, I don't see it. Not to the level that some expect. 60 wins, breeze through the Eastern Conference and get to the finals where they'll probably lose to somebody but have a chance. I don't see that narrative that it seems like everybody else does.
One question about Cleveland. Which is more unguardable? The Pelicans finishing five we talked about in the last podcast, or the Cleveland Cavaliers finishing five with Irving, Waiters, probably, well, let's say Mike Miller, LeBron James, and Kevin Love?
I'm not that afraid of that. I probably put five other finishing fives ahead of theirs.
Okay.
I'm really not that afraid. I mean, you take the ball. I mean, Kyrie and Deion Waiters want the ball in their hands, and they ain't going to have it. And if LeBron gives it up, which I do think is going to happen, I think he's willing to sacrifice this year, thinking that, you know, maybe give some confidence to these guys and see what these guys could do. If LeBron don't have it in his hands, I'm definitely not terrified. And if he does, Waiters and Irving spotting up the, you know, don't terrify me. You know, Miller would probably, it would be Love and Miller who scares me, but, you know, the other two, I'm more than fine allowing them trying to take the shot, whatever. So I don't know. I'm just not as big of a fan of this roster. I think that they've put themselves in a position with some non-guaranteed contracts and some exceptions, and they still have some picks that they could trade. I think next year could be their year. I think they're one move away. You know, and I think next year, if I had to bet, I think LeBron wins one title in Cleveland, and I think it's the 2015-16 season. I would say, but I'm not that terrified of them this year. I'm glad we get them early twice, and I really expect at least one win from the Pelicans.
Okay. All right, so I think all my rankings were clearly much better than yours.
What do you think, last question, what do you think the Pelicans go against the East this year? 30 games, what's their record?
20-10.
Okay, well, there's one thing we're close to agreeing on. I would have said 21-9, so.
Yeah. I thought about saying 21-9, but then I thought I was just being too cute with the numbers.
Well, I am too cute, so.
All right, so thanks, everybody, for listening to our In the Know Eastern Conference preview. And we'll be back a little later this week, beginning of next week, with our next podcast. Thanks.